I'm Shar Banerjee, and this is Books That Built Me. I'm an ex-executive turned to leadership coach specializing in people managers. My job is to get people out of their manager headspace and into their leadership growth space. I typically work with clients to build leadership DNA and self-leadership muscles in either group programs or one-to-one coaching. But on this show, we're going to dive deep into the stories of other leaders. And it all starts with a book that they believe has fueled their passion, influenced their decisions, and turned book lessons into life lessons. Welcome to Books That Built Me. In today's episode, I'm in conversation with Barb Van Hare. And today we are going to be discussing Dare to Lead, a book by Brené Brown. I'm so glad you could join us. Here we go. Barb, it's so great. It's so great to have you on the show. And I'm so glad that you're bringing all the things Brené Brown, basically, to this time that we have together. And so before we get started, I'm sure our audience members really want to hear a little bit more about you. So why don't you walk us through what it is that you do in this world?
Sure. Yeah. Happy to be here. My work in the world has always been focused on people. And I started doing work in the consulting space at Accenture and IBM, really around large scale change and transformation, went into human resources and talent development. And in 2008, branched out into coaching. And there are just so many pieces to that and brilliant researchers and authors out there bringing lots of great information into play. But as it relates to Brené Brown, she invited those of us in talent development and coaching to apply to be on her facilitator list in 2019 is when I was trained. And so I had always loved her work, but to be able to get trained on how to bring it as a skill set. It's one thing to read the book. It's another thing to put these skills into practice. And so I'm just hugely passionate about courage, vulnerability, and all the skill sets around that. But I think that's maybe me.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a great intro to the history of you, the current of what you're doing and how Brené Brown sort of feeds into that. And it certainly sounds like the impact in the work that she has created is, you know, what's coming to mind is like ripple effect.
Yes, I think that's a great way to put it. She doesn't stop. She is so dedicated to the research and advancing the concepts and ideas. It keeps getting better all the time.
Yeah. And I did notice that you are a Dare to Lead facilitator, which truly just excited me to my core, because the one great thing about books is, you know, it's fair to read it. It's fair to be inspired. Right. It's fair to flip through the pages. And I like dog ear my thing. I write notes down. Right. Yeah. Like I'm so into a book when I'm reading a book. Mm-hmm. But the really incredible thing about books is what happens after we close the last page.
I agree completely because it's the what we do next and which pieces we're going to focus on. And I think for each of us, what I always try to say is if you just grab one thing out of here and then get that right. And then maybe you can move on to the next thing, but it can make a huge difference.
Yeah. And it sounds like you've been going through several one things with Brown. What's the one thing that you want to share with us today that's really stuck with you?
You know, I would say the first really big impact her work and Dare to Lead has had on me is just really understanding my armor. And she talks about that all of us have different ways that we feel small and get into shame. And it could be shame, it could be other words, anxiety, stress, or anything that makes us feel like we're not safe. And certainly in the world today, there's just a lot of external forces that can cause some of that as well. But for me, I really got in touch with my armor is control, sometimes kind of well, I feel vulnerable even just saying it, but it's like, if I'm not able to kind of handle things and control things, then I kind of puff up and get a little overbearing. And in her work, she talks about noticing the physical signs, like I would get flushed, or I would get or tight in my chest and my shoulders. And once I started to notice that, like I could almost respond to that sooner than my head could figure out. All of these responses are so natural. It's just human. When we don't feel safe, we protect ourselves. And so it just has been a lot easier for me over time to notice what my triggers are and then have a choice. Yeah. Right. And like, I don't need to control this right now. I'm actually safer than I think I am. So I'm not sure if that makes sense, but it was huge for me.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually want to dive into shame.
Yeah.
Because I find that, and you talked about psychological safety, you talked about vulnerability, but shame, the word itself, I find does not make its way to the boardroom enough. It does not make its way to meetings enough, but it's so present underneath all of the layers that we've kind of built.
Absolutely. It's really part of our human experience. And the executives that rose to the top did not escape that. And but I do find the more that armor has been used to advance ourselves in our career, the harder it is to own it. I think I make this up, but I think that leaders that have shamed and blamed and controlled and pushed and all the things they've done with armor to get to where they are, they have a lot to lose. Like it's a lot to take responsibility for how they got there. And so it's not to say that senior leaders can't take a look at themselves in the mirror. I think with the help of good coaching and things like that, then you can start to take it off and forgive yourself, but all of us do it. And the shame piece is like, I didn't do that good enough, or something went wrong and I don't know how to take responsibility for it because it's a really big deal, or I got feedback and it hurt a little bit, or I have to tell somebody something hard and I'm not sure how they're going to take it. I mean, there's so many traps, you know, in our daily experience that can make us feel small.
Yeah. I love that word that you just said, traps. In her book, she explains it really beautifully, because I think shame gets confused with guilt a lot.
Yes.
And guilt is, you know, a really great way that she put it was, guilt is I did something bad. Versus shame is I am bad.
Oh
it
my gosh.
Your identity.
Yeah. When I heard that distinction for the first time, it's like, whoa.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Guilt, I can take responsibility, apologize, make amends. I'm not a bad person. But when we're in shame, we believe that we aren't good enough. And that hurts a lot. And it really disconnects us. And in that space, that's where we armor up.
Yeah. And so this is what she talks about in the book, about the reason shame is so prevalent is that it gains its power from being unspoken. And we talked about identity, right? It's the I am bad versus I did something bad. And it's that unwanted identity that's so sticky, which is the primary elicitor of shame. And it's these characteristics that undermine our vision for who it is that we truly want to be. So I love that you called out coaching as a great example for sort of like making that distinction a bit more unsticky, you know, to like peel, like remove that Velcro, peel off, be like, that's just an identity that you've stuck on yourself, and you have the choice to kind of like rip that off too.
You know, I love your metaphor for that, because I do feel like there's a time in all of our lives where that identity does get kind of stuck to us. And it sometimes can take somebody outside of us to say, hey, that's not you. You are worthy, you have value, you are safe, you are okay, and do that strengths-based discussion about here are all the things I'm capable of, and separating the circumstances or the things we can take responsibility in that guilt space versus our identity, and make them set, like tear apart that Velcro. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah. And to even, and I love how you said tear apart, because the behavior that you have, or the behavior that you sort of personified in that moment, does not necessarily relate back to who you are at the core.
Exactly. Exactly. Because if we're in shame and we think I am bad, I'm a bad human, it's almost unrecoverable.
Yeah.
Like we're not worthy of connection or love. And so therefore we withdraw further into our armor and away from connection. And really the next thing this book really taught me is the antidote is empathy. And when you said it, you know, shame survives when it's unspoken, and it grows out of control when we hide it and don't lean into vulnerability. But when we open ourselves up to connection, empathy, vulnerability, shame can't survive. Like, and that's the way forward. And it is huge. And we don't have enough of it, I don't think, in our spaces today. A lot of reasons: we're moving too fast, or, you know, we're not doing our work of starting with self. And we just, you know, we think we're told we're supposed to be empathetic, and we're supposedly supposed to know how to do that. But I think it takes a lot. I don't know about you. Like, what do you think about empathy?
Oh man, I was just going to get into that word.
Yeah.
Empathy. So the empathy, so it's interesting, because sometimes you just kind of have to understand what it's not before you get into what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she as well recognizes this, because when in defining empathy, she talks about what's sympathy and how that's different from empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so sympathy is, I feel something for you. I feel something for you versus empathy is feeling something with you.
Right. Right. And Brené will really emphasize too, that you don't have to have the exact same experience of the circumstance, but if you know grief in your own way, you can be with somebody whose grief in their way, or anger or frustration or shame and all of these things. And so we just have to be able to connect with emotional language. And I do have to have a shout out to her Atlas of the Heart, which is an amazing book of all the emotions. And it helps us be in empathy when we can make distinctions between how we're feeling. But that's a big piece of it, is being able to connect to the emotions.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that. The definition of words itself is almost this bridge that we need in order to get into an emotion in an even deeper way.
Right.
Right. Like that's what we enable here, is the understanding and awareness of the true expansive emotional range. Once we have the language that helps us connect to the emotion.
Yes. Yep. And there are a few other pieces to it too. And one of them comes from Kristen Neff. She's an amazing researcher as well. But we have to be mindful in empathy too. And what she means by that is that we don't, you know how we were talking about, you shouldn't identify with shame. Shame is I am bad. Yeah. You also don't want to become your emotions. Your emotions are something that are like a river that flow through you. And so the same goes when you're in empathy with somebody else. You don't want to be, it's not like if I'm grieving, I don't want to be grief for the rest of my life. That is not who I am. It's an emotion I'm experiencing that will come and go. And so having this mindful flow to emotions and empathy is really important. And the other thing that kind of knocked me on my can, not going to lie, is you can't really be in judgment. Yes. And I was like, okay, damn. But like, okay, if I have judgment about somebody, how can I possibly be open and empathetic, right? And so I started taking a look at all the, and all of us do it, right? We have judgments about this was good or this was bad or that I didn't like this, or, but it's really hard for me to open myself up to somebody and be vulnerable if I'm in judgment. And so I don't know, she doesn't dive into that in a huge amount of detail, but it was a big thing for me, like, oh, why do I need to be judgy about this? Like, I don't need that here. I just need to connect and love as much as I possibly can, which is kind of a crazy thing to say, but it's better for me to come at it that way than it is to be right or wrong about something. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. In fact, I think I would just love to double click on this because there was something that you said, which was, just so beautifully put about how the presence of empathy and lack of judgment is the antidote to shame. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about, like, how exactly do you get around to looking at shame in the eye and saying, you like, you don't belong here?
Right. Well, and so I love that you're double clicking on this because really most of the work, in order to be present for somebody else, we got to do the work with ourselves, right? And so in my judgment's less about out there in the world and more about how I'm punishing myself for not being good enough. And when I can let go of that, then I'm letting go of shame, and then I'm able to take off the armor, and then I'm able to be with somebody else. And I don't care to judge them. If I'm not judging myself, like, what do I need? I mean, I want the same for them, right? So I think that's a really important thing you just unlocked.
Oh my goodness. And this is the thing for me. Like, this is totally my one thing, that it all begins with the self within. You know, she talks about this at the end of the book, and I was just so happy that she did, because I don't know if this resonated for you, but she talks about trust and the definition of trust and what it means to generate trust and garner trust and how do you build trust. And then the most beautiful thing happened, which was actually it starts with you first. How do you build trust within?
I know. That was another big flip for me. I was like, okay, trust with teams, got it. Trust with another human, got it. There's a great structure, acronym, Braving Trust. But then I was like, wait a minute. How are you building trust with yourself? How are you holding commitments to yourself? How are you being generous with yourself? And I was like, whoa. Like, yeah, then I could start to see where I was letting myself down a little bit, not in a way to go back and punish myself or any of that, but to let it go. And from this point forward, do better. Braving trust is really, you said it. It's like, all of this is an inside job first. Start with self. You really, that's the only way.
Yeah. And so for anyone who has not yet read this book, I know you said Braving Trust. So for anyone who wants to know kind of what that means, Braving is an acronym that she uses. So the B stands for boundaries, which is respect my boundaries and ask to understand if you don't know what my boundaries are. But the self version is, do I respect my own boundaries?
Right. Am I saying yes or no too much? Or do I need to say no more? All of that. Yeah.
Am I clear? Yeah. Am I clear with myself? So that's the B. The R is reliability.
Reliability.
So which is like, can I count on you? And then the flip of it is, can I count on myself?
Right. Right. Am I going to do what I said I was going to do? Accountability. Can I hold myself? That's the A. Can I hold myself to account without punishing, shaming, blaming, but just, take a look back at what happened and be responsible for that.
Yeah. Responsibility, accountability. So that's BRA, the V. Oh, I love the V. I don't know about you.
I do too.
The vault.
Yeah.
What a word.
It is. And it's really sacred. It's about confidentiality and the stories we tell. And that was a big one for me as I was doing that self assessment is that sometimes I gossip or back channel, or I don't talk to the person I really should be talking to. And I'm not the only one, I know this, but for me, it was a bit of a wake up call. Like, what am I feeding with that? What good is it doing? And actually, I think it's harming me and my self-trust more. And I was able to let it go.
Yeah, I love that you said the word sacred, because that's exactly what it is. Vault is not sharing information that's not yours to share, which mm-hmm. is very easy to understand in a group setting or mm-hmm. at work. But the flip of it, when you think about it for yourself, is that did you stop others from sharing that was inappropriate? Or did you honor your own version of your vault?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's sacredness here.
It really is. And it takes courage, I think, to hold the vault and respect the vault. And that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. The next one, though, integrity for me is, doing what's right versus what's fun, fast, and easy. Living into your values, not just professing your values. And there's another piece. Doing the right thing, even if it's hard. And I think that means that you have more hard conversations, but you don't take the easy way out. Like, you really have to stand up for yourself and hold dear what matters to you in that space.
Like, courage lives here, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And then the N in braving is non-judgment. And that's where we are not afraid to ask for help if we need it. But also, to me, I took it to a broader sense of, like, I don't think you can build trust if you're in a lot of judgment about somebody either. Like, or myself, if I am punishing myself or setting a bar, an impossible bar, that I'm never going to hit, like, that's not going to work either. So that was another place to bring more compassion to myself as well. Yeah. And then generosity is the last piece of this, which is, how can we assume positive intent and be generous, spacious, compassionate, I'm so glad you had us walk through that, because it's and especially related to self, like, it's just so easy to miss, like, and take it to your team or take it to a relationship, but start with self.
And that's exactly it. A lot of leaders, I find, are thinking that they've got to bring this matrix to their groups and just start mm-hmm. from the relationship, which is a great place to start, to be fair.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But it's even better when you start with yourself first, because Agreed. You're able, I think that armor word that you talked about, you're mm-hmm. able to just kind of, like, take it off.
Yep. Velcro. It's a little sticky, and it's, it's hard to do, but totally worth it.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. in your time as, bringing these conversations or bringing these concepts into workplaces, I'm sure there are things that you watch for as mm-hmm. you see this is the time and space to bring up the concept of shame or to bring up mm-hmm. the concept of self-trust. Mm-hmm. What are the symptoms that you are mm-hmm. aware of as you recognize that it's time now?
Yeah. There, Brené talks about the metaphor of termites, that if you can see termite damage, meaning if you can see shame in organizations, you've got a really big problem and you've got to really put out an SOS on that culture and do something very quickly. And they are things like back channeling and using power over, and there's a whole list of things, and you take a look at it and you're like, oh my God, this is happening everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. The meeting outside of the meeting. And mm-hmm. so there are lots of symptoms of that, and barriers to shame in organizations. Perfectionism is a huge driver of shame in organizations, where we're pushing too hard and driving for perfection, which is actually hustling for our worth. Perfectionism is not healthy striving or doing well. It's hustling to prove that we're worthy. Mm-hmm. And as we've talked about with that shame place, shame is I am bad, or I am not worthy. And so perfectionism is definitely an indication of shame. So I haven't been in an organization yet where there aren't some of these symptoms. And I think I haven't seen a team that doesn't benefit from doing this work. I think it peels back some of the layers that block us from seeing each other and connecting with each other and working with each other to create and innovate and partner and collaborate and all the wonderful things we want in organizations.
I think like the ones that come to mind, as you mentioned, perfectionism is, mm-hmm. is I think a lot of people can identify themselves probably in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing on back channeling and the meeting after the meeting or the,
yes,
the dirty yes, I'll say yes, mm-hmm. but I truly meant no, and I'm going to talk about it. And that's not necessarily in the best, I mean, it's definitely not in keeping with what's right for you. Definitely not what's right for the vision and the purpose mm-hmm. and the goals of the team and the company.
Right.
And so, yeah, no, thank you so much for calling all of those out.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a part of the book that you touched on for psychological safety? Because I feel like we're all kind of dancing around psychological safety within the relationship, right? So mm-hmm. we talk about the self first, and mm-hmm. then it's the space that you're creating.
Yeah. I think for me, she starts with it in the workshop, and it is building a container. And as you know, in other spaces, we could call it things like designed alliance or agreements. But I think that you cannot step into this work without some rules of engagement and what's okay and what's not okay. It's really getting into that boundary space to create that psychological safety. Not everybody's up for this work right off the bat. But there are some ways in which we can agree that this is a time we're going to step into some harder, more sensitive conversations, and this is how we're going to do that. So container building was a pretty big deal in terms of that. But I, you know, there's lots of research and studies that it's impossible to have highly productive teams without that psychological safety. The trick is, I think sometimes you have to have some really hard conversations before you can get there. And so it may not feel safe on the path to safety, but if you can really lean in and trust intentions, like assume positive intent, I think that it can get created, and anything that's toxic or hard can get talked about and then released, if that makes sense.
100%. And I love that you called out the very important detail that on the journey to psychological safety or creation of psychological safety, mm-hmm. it may not feel safe.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make it wrong. It's right. just a difficult path. It's worth right. it, but it is a difficult
Correct.
Path.
Correct. I agree 100%. It's this is not easy, but it's totally worth it, is what I think.
Yeah. Part of why we do this, you know, Books That Built mm-hmm. Me, is that the book itself is so wow and powerful, and these concepts are amazing. How has this concept of either shame or psychological mm-hmm. safety or self-trust, how has that shown up for you, Barb, in the way that it's built you
mm-hmm. personally? You know, one of the pieces we haven't talked about is Brené has a section on feedback. And I think giving and receiving feedback are areas that are extremely vulnerable. And I have thought and reflected back on some times in my life when I received hard feedback. And I think I've, and so it's all been related to my armor. I was in a leadership program that was a 10-month retreat-based leadership program. And we were at the end of it and we were giving each other feedback. I can't believe I'm going to say this on here, but I am. And this was from people who love me, who had positive intent, but we were using metaphors. And they said, Barb, you're going to have the word disappointed on your tombstone because nobody's ever going to live up to your standards. And then the other thing they said is, you are like an ambulance circling all of us, waiting for something to break so you can fix it. And I was like, oh my God. And I just, you know, I was crying, but not because I was hurt, because I was so grateful that somebody was actually brave enough to show me how hurtful my armor was to them. And I just think about this in our organizations, we are so scared to give feedback. And yet it's the way we grow. I have never been more grateful for that experience. And I decided from that point on, I don't want to be that ambulance circling, waiting for somebody else to break so I can feel value. It's like I can give myself value, and I do not want my loved ones in my life to think I'm disappointed in them in any way, shape, or form, nor do I really want to be disappointed in myself or who I am.
And you know what? This is so great, because even when you Google, how do you give feedback? Like, Google will kind of teach you, like, here's a 3-step framework on how to give feedback. But what I'm hearing from your beautiful story, and thank you so much for sharing that, mm-hmm. is that you have to also take feedback with generosity. Mm-hmm. And if you don't mind, like, stepping into that moment and walking us through how you did that, because you said there were tears. It wasn't sadness. It was gratitude for this opportunity. How do you step into the perspective of, I'm going to be grateful for this opportunity because I don't get it enough?
Yeah, I do think that as leaders grow and evolve in organizations, the less feedback they get. I think it's just an issue, but I was lucky enough to be in a safe container. We had agreements set, and this is with a group that I had built some great trust with. And it was an exercise where we did this for the entire group. And it was, and I've done this before with teams. It was like a fishbowl exercise. So I was up in the front. So by the time it was my turn, I was ready for it. The other thing is, I did have a reaction. So I was having a physical reaction. It wasn't shame per se, but it was sure vulnerability. It felt, I was very exposed, but I had a friend of mine taking notes, because I wasn't really processing. I trusted her to capture everything that was being said. And to be honest, I gave myself time. And I think this is true with any feedback. I did not respond, nor was I expected to in that moment, but I unpacked that over weeks and months, leaned into my mentors, coaches, wanted to really understand it and how it affected me. And I think that's what really good feedback can do. It's more of a journey rather than an action item, you know, or a to-do.
What I'm hearing is, when you get the tough feedback, like, you were clearly ready for it, Barb. You were in that safe container. You were ready. It was your turn. Somebody was taking notes, and you were primed for really just taking it in and making the best of it. But what sounds like really worked for you is that you had decided that there was a difference between a reaction and a response, where a reaction was not necessary and not called for, and a response was the right way to go, which comes with silence and reflection and thoughtfulness and sort of unpacking that. But what I also heard is very helpful is just dropping or letting go of defensiveness, right? Like, that urge to, no, I'm not.
Right, right. Like, you're just giving me feedback. Like, I'll do with it what I want.
Including maybe rejecting it, right?
Like,
that's a possibility too. Yeah.
I'm sure there were some other things on the list that I don't remember, which I didn't really integrate. But I will tell you, there was another time I was leading a course and I was not ready for feedback, and it was very hard feedback. And it was crazy. I was co-leading and two people, it's a longer story, but two people were upset with how I was managing some weird circumstances. They were unusual circumstances. And they went to my co-leader and said, you know, we don't really like Barb because she's being condescending and dismissive. And so my co-leader comes to tell me in the hallway 5 minutes before class starts, hey, two of the participants are concerned that you're being condescending and dismissive. And I will tell you, my whole world got narrow and muffled. I had all these symptoms of shame, and I pulled on that armor so fast. And the first thing I wanted to do was kick them out of class. And I'm laughing now because my armor was the first thing. And I had a very caring colleague who said, Barb, before you decided to kick them out, I saw how hurt you were. I said, oh my God, you're right. I said, I do this work for a living. I just pulled on armor. What do I need to do to take it off and be vulnerable? And so I walked into the room, and again, I'm crying. And here's why I'm crying is because I care so much about how I do my work as a trainer. I want to love everybody that comes into my classroom as much as I possibly can. And to be condescending and dismissive is the very last thing I show up for. It's the last, I would never get out of bed for that. I get out of bed to love. And so I obviously was having an impact I didn't want to have. And I was being seen as somebody I didn't, you know. So we had to, and it was with the whole group, and we had to like get it all sorted out. And I also had to hold my boundaries because there were some pieces they wanted me to take responsibility for, which were not mine. And I was not going to, they were misunderstanding some of what's happening. So anyway, long story short, it was a huge mess, but I learned a ton about not being ready for feedback and how that takes a ton of courage to show up. And if you have time to integrate it, it's way better. But if you don't, you still got to show up. So anyway, I've had it both ways.
Oh man. Thank you so much for taking us through the two scenarios, the mm-hmm. time when you're not ready and the time that you are ready.
Yeah, right. It happens.
They mm-hmm. both elicit that body reaction.
Totally.
And it sounds like the body can never, ever, 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 ever lie.
Never, ever, right.
Never, ever, ever lie.
Yeah.
But it's what you do with that mm-hmm. that then defines who you are today. And even as you're walking us through this moment, this what 3 seconds? 3 seconds of feedback that turned everything upside down.
Right.
It's the story that you share with us today mm-hmm. that really inspires everyone who's listening.
Mm. Thank
because
you.
Because you're not the first. You're not the first to receive tough feedback. Like we all have. Certainly I have, right? And you're right about it being like, I almost feel like it's, you know, that the juicer, like you put all the
in
it, it's like, rah, like you are
totally
done.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wanted to tap out, but yeah. And I know you've done this too. Like you stay. You get back up, like that's resilience right there. And you rewrite the story. And I think the bottom line would be lean in, like you have friends and allies out there and they are for you and with you, not to like blow it off or like make it pretty, but to have you do the hard thing to get in the arena, right? I mean, that's what Brené Brown, her work is all about, is like getting into that arena and staying rather than running away. And we need friends for that.
Yeah. And we stayed. We stayed for
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's so many people who are listening right now who are on team stay. Team stay.
Yeah.
Figure out why. Go deeper. Do the work and make it count.
Totally. Mm. Yeah. I love how you said that. Make it count. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Mm. And we all have the choice to make it count, which is
totally.
The other thing that Brené is all about. She's like, you know, you have the choice, right? You're choosing.
Correct. Yeah.
So as we close, this this episode out, a lot of times we think this is the one book that has changed us, and it really has. This book has defined the work that you do.
Yes,
I love this book so much. I love her. I love her on the Netflix show. I love watching her talk. I love her on the
Max HBO.
She's amazing. She's absolutely amazing. What's another book that you has truly
well and you might allow me to have bonus books, but I've been recommending to some of my clients recently is Don Miguel Ruiz and the Four Agreements. Have you read this
Yes.
Don't take it personally. Like, it's like, and be impeccable with your word. They've got them all in here. But the other one that has made me who I am today, it has to do with that leadership program, but it's Coactive Leadership and 5 Ways to Lead. And this one is a huge, like, we lead in different ways. Sometimes we're in the front and driving where we go. Sometimes we're really collaborative and partnering with our co-leaders. Sometimes we're more coach-like from behind. Sometimes we're taking in from the balcony or the field. But all of it, always, 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 the fifth way, the starting way is with self. You always start with self. And so that's another one I really love.
Thank you, Barb. Thank you so much for your kindness, your generosity, for the stories that you share, because it's these stories that we actually remember more than the theory, right? And thank you so much for sharing with the world that it matters more what you do after you flip that last page and you close that book that made you feel so great. What happens after is almost more important than what happened during.
It really is. And I would just highlight it by saying you cannot be courageous without being vulnerable. And we aren't born vulnerable. We're taught to actually self-protect, and you have to train yourself. You have to practice these skills and be intentional about it. And there's a whole community out there that's inviting all of us to be together in this. And so thank you, Char, for bringing me on. This has been lovely to have a conversation with you about a book we both love.
Thank you. And that's it for this episode of Books That Built Me. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps support what we're doing. Thanks for listening, and you can always find me on my LinkedIn at Char Banerjee. If you're dealing with a leadership challenge, I'd love to hear from you and have you join our community. And of course, I will talk to you next Tuesday on a brand new episode of Books That Built Me.